A tēnā koutou katoa e te iwi whānui, tai mai nei raro i te tahuhu o tēnei whare, whare wānanga o Massey University. Kanui te miatu ki a koutou, ngā pākake, te ariki tūmu, tā meihana, tā tāmati, tā tīpene, o tira e rauranga tira ma. Kanui te miatu ki a koutou. I've been told I've got about 10 minutes, so I'm going to try and zoom through this really quickly. Aroha mai. I suppose a lot of the kōrero I have, a lot of my whakaro has been said already, reiterating though a couple of points I want to make. The context I want to talk about this afternoon is in a governance context when we look at balancing Indigenous worldviews with global perspectives. So that's the framework I'm going to look examine it really quickly. And how we try to balance, and we've always tried to balance our worldview with global perspectives. As others have mentioned, I do want to focus a little bit on the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and I actually bring in a case study. And again, I'll do this fast. I got some pictures here, so enjoy those. And then we're going to look at some of the governance challenges. So, one of the first things, and it's self-explanatory, it's axiomatic, that the Māori worldview are different. Right? They're different to New Zealand's mainstream worldview. When we look at the whenua, we turn it the other way around, or their way is the wrong way around. But we look at it differently, and it's important that mainstream acknowledges those differences. Mm-hmm. And actually not only acknowledge it, but they celebrate those differences. It's important that we celebrate diversity. It strengthens us. It makes us distinct as a nation. And we've had a lot of kōrero about that. When we look at Indigenous peoples around the globe, we share similar challenges, similar issues as my good colleague here. Sorry, let me pull my other notes out. Our manuhiri tuarangi, Dr. Koholo Kula, has mentioned to us a lot of these things happening to the kanaka Māori in Hawaii are similar to what we're going through, and other Indigenous peoples around the world. They share those challenges of colonisation, urbanisation, globalisation, and so on. And we have similar challenges, similar solutions, or similar ways of trying to overcome those challenges. And one way that the international community has tried to reconcile that diversity globally for the Indigenous peoples, as the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, albeit 30 years or even more in the making. But in terms of balancing those worldviews, that diversity, that's what the Declaration is about, among other things. And in terms of balancing our priorities with global perspectives, Article 3 is a key one, in my opinion. And Article 3 is about the right to self-determination. I'd like to add too, our traditional tikanga was not just about rights, but it's about responsibilities too. No rights without responsibilities. So when we're making decisions in the past, our karawa have told us this, our kui have told us this, it wasn't about what am I entitled to the kai, but it's what's my responsibility to our people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a paradigm shift that we need to make as a people too, particularly with, among other areas, our governance. Now, Article 3, it talks about the right to self-determination. And this is hugely political, but the right for Indigenous peoples and responsibility to freely determine their political status, free to pursue their economic, social, cultural development. I believe at least those four areas are what we need to do in terms of balancing our self-determination, not development, but our self-determination as a people locally, individually, internationally, globally. Mm. And so governance is a key challenge here for us all. Now back to Ngāti Apakura. Our people had this historically, and we've heard this already, but we've talked in general terms. So I just want to provide a really quick, actual, specific example. Ngāti Apakura, no Tainui, Tainui Waka. I do have Ngāti Apakura whakapapa. In fact, I alleged most Ngāti Tainui, Tūwharetoa people, If they look hard enough, they'll find they have apakura whakapapa too. And Ngāti Apakura, people in the Te Awamutu region, and they had a great entrepreneurial tradition, great good governance tradition too. They were great business people, so much so that their little area, their little rohe, or their little kainga of Rangi Awhia, was referred to as the granary of the North Island. Right? And I have a map here. Well, they did sign a treaty too. Here's the map. I did this as research. And on the side job, I might add here, e hua ma, if you want economic development, don't go into academia. There's no money in it. But it's a great service, right? Actually, you get abused by your people when you do this as well. But it's strengthening. Great for my mana, eh? So while we were doing this, my colleague and I, Paul Meredith, among others, we had to, as we're going through the whole process for the Rohe Potai claims for Ngāti Apakura, we had to come up with some maps, and we asked, you know, do all the historical evidence, go and get, go and talk to the people, get the oral evidence as well, bring it all together. And it was a hell of a job, but also trying to do a map on this, it's a flawed concept, really. Because once you have a map, it's treated as gospel. And we were asked to, for example, what are the traditional boundaries? I said, oh, that's a hell of a question too. Boundaries. But with our boundaries, we put it more this way. Actually, Māori didn't have boundaries. We had spheres of influence. And our spheres of self-determination influence were often determined by whakapapa. That was the tikanga, eh? So the current treaty settlement process, what they want is legal precision and certainty, where there was no legal precision and certainty historically. And traditionally, so we say, they weren't boundaries, they were spheres of influence, they were not lines, they were zones. So there, that was our self-determination. I prefer the term manamuta haki. But here, what we did be able to find and clarify quite clearly was Ngāti Apakura had great economic development, great economic power. In Rangi Awhia, as I mentioned, they were exporting. They're in Te Awamutu, they had spheres of influence also in Kawhia Moana. And along with the other Tainui tribes, they were exporting globally to Sydney. A lot of their goods that they were producing, they were importing up to Auckland, the Auckland market, going up the rivers and also up the Moana. And they actually had, we did find out, and it's going to stir things up, it was the Tāmaki Agreement, but they actually had some spheres of influence in Onehunga too, where the market was, right? But anyway, they had a lot of economic development, so much so they're very successful. In around Rangi Awhia, they had thousands of acres of grain, orchards. A lot of the contemporary observers from different pākehā, actually, they said around Rangi Awhia, they had all these orchards, farms, they had a race course, they had three churches, they had schools in their village, they had all these hamlets, these houses, and they had four flour mills. And actually, as is the custom, our tikanga, the first fruits of their flour mills, and again, this is showing their global perspective and trying to balance economic, social, cultural, political. The first fruits of their flour mills, they actually exported it up to England in the mid-1850s, and they sent it as a gift to Queen Victoria. And as a response, what Queen Victoria did was she sent them three of these pictures of the royal family, the monarchy. Quite interesting correspondence where they, you know, them coming down the rivers and so on too. But that was a show of, in some ways, acknowledging their self-determination as a group, as a nation, and they're dealing globally. They thought globally. They worked globally. They also, in the late 1850s, they sent up two of their rangatira up to Austria. They went up to Austria deliberately to learn how to print. They met with the Austrian Archduke, who asked them what they wanted for a gift. They learnt German on the way. And while they're up there, he said, what gift do you want me to give you before you leave? And they said, a printing press. So they learnt how to print, how to do pictures. They brought the printing press back to Rangiawhia, and that was the start of Te Hokioi, the Tainui newspaper. That came from Ngāti Apakura. So just really quickly, they had great entrepreneurial vision. They had that economic, social, political development, self-determination, manamotaki. They unleashed that that creative potential that Charles talked about yesterday. And we did that traditionally. Some of our great historians acknowledge this, Michael King, for example. We also had a great corporate governance tradition too. You read that, you can read it faster than I can say it. But, this was Reeves. He worked with Apiranga Ngata on the East Coast with a lot of the governance developments up the coast and elsewhere. But he talked about how Māori had a corporate existence from the start. So he had this great balanced, self-determination. And the government deliberately undid it. For Rangiawhia and Ngāti Apakura, the invasion of the Waikato, when they invaded Rangiawhia, which was actually declared a sanctuary, it's where the elderly and the women were. It was a mission sanctuary too from the war, and there was agreement from the soldiers that they wouldn't attack it. But because of the strength of the Pātirangi line, which was about 5 to 6 kilometres long, and it resembled a World War I bunker, General Cameron and the other troops at that time knew there's no way in heck they could take it. So what they did was they attacked the supply lines, Rangiawhia. And then the rest is history, Raupatu, Charles mentioned yesterday, e pātohau, is to commemorate an enduring reminder of what happened, specifically to Ngāti Apakura. But that was the undermining of their self-determination as a people. And with the rest of Waikato, Tainui, Maniputu and others, they withdrew after Orako into the King Country, where incidentally they maintained their manamotuhake, they maintained their self-determination for another 25 years. Had their own laws, their own institutions, their own bank, their own tax system and so on. And, interestingly, no European was allowed in their geopolitical boundary. So they had sentinels marking it, and any who did, missionaries tried. Like Captain Cook in our Hawaiian relations, they took care of business there. But they were warned. This was a legal boundary in Aukati. But we had this self-determination, and it was deliberately undermined, and we were in a state from the period of perilous imbalance, and we've been struggling with it ever since, coming to terms with it. Now, more recent global developments, Aro has talked about this, but the whole internationalisation of Indigenous rights, Māori have been there from the start, including King Tawhiao. And King Tawhiao went up to visit Queen Victoria, seeking redress for Aupatu, about 1884. Actually, I'd like to say that King David from Hawaii probably came to Rangiawhia and tried to make a treaty with King Tawhiao too, to bring them in there. But Māori have been active in the international arena. Look at Ratana 1921 going to the League of Nations, as well as Deskahe from the Six Nations up in North America. So very active there. But what's been happening with these global developments, and one of the big messages, we can't ignore it. What's going on globally? We're a global village. New Zealand is a village. Māori are a key part of that village. So notwithstanding our successes, we have to acknowledge what's going on globally and deal with it. So like our tūpuna in the past, our unleashing our creative potential, we need to be great innovators. We need to have that vision. And we need good governance too. We need to be great at our governance. I don't think I've got time to go into the different models overseas, so I won't. Just rest assured there's some great developments going on over there, including in Australia, that we have much to learn from. And they have much to learn from us as well. Now, some of the challenges in terms of our unleashing our creative power and our governance, I believe, are distilled into at least 4 areas. The 4 T's, I call them. in terms of our governance challenges, whatever, post-settlement governance entities, Māori health authorities, education providers, whānau ora, so on, it's these four areas here: traditional, transactional, transformational, and translational governance, and reconciling or balancing all of those areas, which in effect are economic, social, political, cultural development, and environmental. I think one area that's been forgotten, araho mai hoa mā, is spiritual development too. Wairuatanga. That's what guided our forebears to come to traverse Te Mana Nui a Kiwa. They looked to the stars. They were guided by Te Atua. And trying to get that balance right. It's elusive. It's a challenge. With traditional, it's what place does tikanga and mātauranga play in the boardroom? Or is it just, excuse my cynicism here, it's what happens when you do law? Is it just a karakia before we pillage the ocean floor? Those are some key areas we need to research and deal with. Transactional governance, you know, the Māori economy doing some great things. The challenge for me is, I believe we're at a place where we're mimicking what's gone on up in Alaska with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of the early 1970s. We're corporatising our tribe and corporatising our development, our self-determination. Transformational, that at the end of the day, these legal entities, whatever they are, in my opinion, they're there to represent our people. They're there to represent our community. Therefore, are they contributing to the transformation of our people and our community? Unfortunately, if you look overseas, some of the models, some of the trends that occur there, is what actually transforms are these legal entities and certain groups within the tribe. And these groups, or these legal entities that are established initially to represent the tribe, to represent the community, after a while become a leviathan, or supra iwi, whatever the term is. They become a leviathan, and they actually replace the tribe, not represent. Again, excuse my cynicism, but that's what the Lord does to you. I might add too, I've repented. I'm not a lawyer anymore. I'm a poor academic in a better space. So, e hoa mā, aroha mai, I'm going on a bit, but I better finish. There's an old adage with a lot of indigenous peoples around the world, particularly on certain research, it is that the best defence of indigenous self-determination and self-governance is the effective exercise thereof. The best defence of Māori self-determination and governance is the effective exercise thereof, within that balance of traditional, transactional, transformational, translational governance. And I believe, much like that example that Jamie mentioned, let me get it, up in the Taranaki area of that group, who just took charge, right, and took over. We're not waiting for the law, we're not waiting for the government, we're doing it ourselves. Which is unleashing the creative potential of mana motuhake. That's our right. That's our responsibility. Don't wait for the law to change. Don't wait for government. We need to do these things, good governance de facto, or in fact, before we do it de jure in law. That's what self-determination is about at the end of the day. And getting the balance right, and my last little point I'll make it for Kenny Huama, is with our self-determination, I believe it actually has to start at the whānau level. If the whānau isn't strong, the iwi isn't strong. The hapū isn't strong either. If the whānau isn't strong and these corporate entities are strong, it's still a failure. And no other success can compensate for failure in the whānau. So, so it's up to us to get that balance right. It is our right. It's also our responsibility. And so when we look at self-determination, self-governance, what are we trying to achieve as a people? The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is a good base. And remember, too, that declaration is minimal. Those are minimal standards we should adhere to. We should be aspiring to. It's greater than that. But But that's the start. And we do it in law. And in fact, so we move the declaration of self-determination from an aspiration to an inspiration through innovation, resolution, reconciliation, and so on and so forth. That's our right. That's our responsibility. Let me finish with one whakatauki. Aroha mai. My last whakatauki, I believe, is... Actually, I'm not trying to be whakahihi here, but this book actually is a good... it's a recent book that myself and Paul Meredith, we wrote this for the commemorations of the New Zealand Wars that went on earlier this year. It's the Battle of Ōrākau. It was for the commemorations. And with this book, what we did was, so it's not really us, we just brought together 10 Māori veterans' accounts of that battle. Here's what happened according to their experience. It's in their words. Some of it's in Māori. It's been translated in English. And it's actually quite a fascinating read. It's coming from our people, but in there you see them trying to reconcile their self-determination and balancing things right too, from their own words. So I do promote it. If you're at Koronehana, you could have got this for a koha of a gold coin. Told you I'm poor in academia, right? That's another reason why. There's no money in publishing either. Engari e hoa ma. My finishing whakatauki is from one of our karawa who told me this. And it's a beautiful whakatauki to capture a lot of the kōrero we've said here. And it's this, e taku mōkai he wā poto noa koe ki Wainganui te wā, ko hipa ki te wā ke te tūmai. Loosely translated, as I am but a speck in the moment of time situated between two eternities, the past and the future. My present situation is significantly influenced by my past, so my future and the future of my mokopuna, our people, is significantly influenced by what we do today. Use that time wisely, hoa. And that's our, unleash our creative potential, that's our manamoto haki right and responsibility. Kia ora tātou.